Hi everyone, and welcome back to another episode of One Health, One Community. My next guest is Dr. Gavoni, an associate professor in the Department of Animal Science. She has made significant contributions to the One Health initiatives at UConn, and I'm excited to continue the discussion with her on animal health and to hear more about her One Health involvement with the Strategic Working Group. Thank you so much for joining me today, Dr. Gavoni. It's so nice to talk to you.
Thank you. I really appreciate you inviting me to have this conversation today.
So I think I know a little bit about your connection to One Health and the Strategic Working Group, but I'd like to ask all guests, what does One Health mean to you?
So One Health to me means looking at where we have an intersection along the lines of human health, animal health, plant health, and the environment. Very often we're in our own disciplines and kind of thinking about how things pertain to our area of expertise or, you know, the mission of our work. But this is an opportunity to really look across disciplines and how we can move things forward or improve the health in all of these areas, and make sure that the work that we're doing, it may be beneficial to animals, but what impact is that going to have on the environment? And how might this also be beneficial or, you know, not helpful to humans, and making sure that the work we're doing incorporates all these areas.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I feel like this is something that we're really enjoying having discussions on so far throughout this podcast, and I'm happy to be bringing some attention to it. I saw that you teach some classes at UConn and that you're an associate professor in the Department of Animal Science. Would you be able to talk a little bit about the classes you teach?
Yeah, I always love to talk about the classes. Teaching is something that currently I'm doing in my area of expertise. So I teach upper level growth and metabolism class, which does have a focus in livestock species, but that's because it's a bit of what we're doing in terms of animal production and the animals we have on campus to use as models. And I also teach with that a one credit scientific writing course as well, which integrates some of the topics and helps students learn to write in scientific format. And although we use livestock as our model, a lot of what we go through in the class is applicable to all species, including humans. So we talk about really focus, because it's only one semester, some of the basics for initial cell development, but put quite a bit of emphasis on the growth and development of muscle, bone, and adipose tissue, and then get into some of the factors involved in regulating the development of these tissues, as well as the interaction with metabolism and whole animal metabolism. I've in the past taught our Principles of Animal Nutrition course, which was a good opportunity for me to kind of expand outside my field and learn more in the area of nutrition. And currently also team teaching animal behavior and training class with Jennifer Nadeau in our department. And this is a really fun opportunity. It's an elective 1,000 level course, where we really get to expose students within the major as well as outside to basic understanding behind the study of animal behavior and some of the biology that regulates that. And then we also incorporate into it a training project where all the students get to pick an animal of choice and work to train that animal three behaviors. And so throughout the course, we integrate different training opportunities for them. We bring in outside speakers, talk about the different training philosophies and different methods. And in terms of animal science, we also try to tie a lot of this back to how we implement this into the care and welfare of our production animals. So a lot of opportunity for student engagement, which is what I like.
Those seem like really unique classes, maybe ones that are like more specialized to like an agriculture-based school, which I think is really cool about UConn. Are some of those classes only offered in the spring if it's like direct contact with animals, or are they like year-round classes?
They're one semester, and it for the courses that I teach, it doesn't matter too much time of year because we can access the animals throughout. We actually in the growth and metabolism class is a fall semester, and it works out well for us because one of the things we do is we work with the recently weaned beef calves on campus, and they get a chance to monitor their growth. So we're talking about growth and all of the factors and the, you know, cellular changes and physiology behind it, but now they get to actually look at the applications and see how these animals change over time and track that, which is a lot of fun.
That's a really great experience. So my next question for you is that I see that you are involved in some research at UConn. I was wondering if you'd also be able to talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, so my research, again, in general, kind of focuses on growth and metabolism. And one of the big projects I'm currently working on is in collaboration with the fetal programming group here at UConn with Steve Zinn and Sarah Reed. And we have some external collaborators as well at other institutions. And in general, what we're interested in understanding is that we know the maternal environment during gestation can impact the fetal growth and development. But what we're seeing, not just from our work, but from humans, rodents, and other species, is that this can impact that offspring's growth and health throughout the remainder of their life. And there's now evidence that it can be passed on to subsequent generations. And so what my lab's interested in particular is the effect of maternal nutrition. And we've maintained a model that looks at the impact of restricted feeding, so not enough nutrients during gestation, as well as overfeeding. And these are, you know, things we see in the human population, in particular, the overfeeding and obesity. We see in other countries, undernutrition is a major issue. And in our production animals, we see both depending on the management styles that are used. And so what we're looking at is not only we've looked at many different stages, fetal development, we looked at early postnatal growth, and we now have a project led by Sarah Reed where we're looking at multi-generational. So essentially what grandma eats, how is that going to impact her grandchildren? And then we're looking at generations following there. So we've been working on these projects for about, I think we're up to about 10 years now. And we use sheep as our model. And sheep is a practical model in doing any of the applied production work. A lot of our work has been funded by USDA with the idea of developing healthy animals that will provide a healthful product for humans, all with trying to develop animals that are more efficient. And efficient really means that, you know, they utilize less resources to reach the same end product. And so this is an area where I think is one application towards One Health. And that's that we're working to ensure that the animals produce a healthful product for humans, that the animals are healthy and their subsequent generations as well, and that we minimize impact on the environment. So it kind of pulls all of those together. But at the same time, and what really excites me is what we're learning is that if mom is not fed correctly, whether it's over or underfeeding, these offspring may grow or appear to grow well, but they tend to have metabolic dysregulation. So we see, like in humans, this will lead to type 2 diabetes, cardiovascular disease, insulin resistance, hyperleptinemia, a lot of the challenges that many humans are facing. And we see in some of our production animals and companion animals as well. And so we know that, you know, it would be easy to say, well, just go back and feed them correctly. But that's not always the case, right? You can't really always fix what happened. And so what we just got a current grant funded for through USDA is to now, again, look at the nutrient restriction model. And then if we supplement with a product, betaine, which we can get from beet pulp and we know is important in growth promotion and feed efficiency, if we feed that to mom, can we maybe correct some of this, right? So the direction we're going now is if we know this insult occurs during gestation, and we can't go back and change that, how can we manage these offspring going forward? And this all directly applies to human health as well, right? So if we can identify ways to maybe decrease that incidence of obesity or type 2 diabetes, which we're seeing on the rise in children too, or provide, you know, ideas for how best to manage going forward, we can help improve the health, right? And so this is going to, again, impact humans. It can affect animals. And then in our animal production, we're always aware of how this is impacting the environment.
That's great. I didn't realize that there could be such a direct application from like animal health to human health in that same model.
Many don't realize, but sheep is actually a great model for humans, especially when you're looking at any of this fetal maternal. The fetus to mom ratio is pretty similar to humans. Their digestive system's a bit different. So there are a few things to think about there with them being a ruminant versus humans and non-ruminant, but you have the advantage that they're not litter bearing, right? So in a lot of the biomedical work that's done in rodent models, you have litter bearing species, and it's very different in terms of their development and trying to use them as a model. So you're seeing more and more that sheep are being used as a biomedical model for several different fields.
That makes sense. I never would have thought about that. So my next question for you is, there always seems to be new scientific findings and just information coming out in relation to, I guess, just different topics related to One Health. So I just wanted to ask, how do you continuously learn about these new topics and this new information and just stay on top of this information in relation to One Health?
Yeah, so One Health is something I've always kind of been aware and involved in because the work that I'm doing, I think, applies to that intersectionality. And because I think that, you know, as we're moving forward, it's really important that we're thinking beyond just our species of interest and just ourselves, right? And so for me, it's, you know, reading the literature. It's something I do as a scientist and do as an educator and being on top of where the latest research is. But then I found more recently, it's about the conversations. And that's where, as you mentioned at the beginning, and how you and I got to know each other a bit is through the college's strategic initiatives. And the implementation team that I'm on is one of the subgroups. And we ended up terming this group, you know, One Health at Calmar. And through this group, we identified a need and an interest across students, faculty, and staff to really, you know, work towards educating students in the area of One Health and to pull faculty together. And that's something that, you know, I thank you for doing, and you've put a lot of effort into and helped us with, and that's identifying what faculty are doing in the areas of One Health. And so having those conversations, bringing people together, you know, reaching out to other institutions. There are many that have institutes of One Health, and learning a bit about what they're doing, I think is where I get a lot of my information and excitement and passion to keep moving forward with this area.
I agree. It's been great to learn about these connections between different professors and departments and even students. So I'm happy to have had this opportunity. The last question that I had for you is there something that you would suggest to listeners to make a positive impact in relation to One Health, or if there's some students that are really interested in One Health to possibly become further involved with it?
Yeah, so I'll start with the students, right? We have the Students for One Health Club on campus is a great way to get started. They have I think it's this weekend coming up. It's a virtual all-day event where they've got a lot of speakers. And so it's in a very engaged group, passionate about One Health and really highlighting what's being done in the area and for themselves to learn as well. As we're moving forward with our strategic implementation, we have a lot of talk about putting together a minor, maybe even major certificate program. So there's a lot of opportunity there, and where students demonstrate that interest, you know, it's going to help us move things along a bit faster too. And they can always reach out to faculty to learn more about their research programs and the courses they're teaching around this area. For others outside of our undergraduate population, whether it's at UConn or across the state or even outside of Connecticut, I encourage folks to really think about the broader impacts of, you know, what they're doing or things they're reading, whether it's on the news or hearing it through social media, and, you know, making an informed decision about how it may not just impact them, but also impact the animals and plants in their environments, and then the environment that we all live in. It really comes down to not just One Health, but we're all one planet. It's one world, and what we do that may benefit ourselves could, you know, benefit others or have the opposite effect and maybe have a negative impact. So really thinking about the broader implications of what we're doing is important.
That makes sense. I think thinking about our manageable actions like joining clubs, but then also the broader impact is important. Thank you so much for sharing your take on this. It was really nice to talk to you. Thank you for joining me.
Thank you, Marlene. I really appreciate the opportunity. And I want to thank you again for all of your efforts in putting the podcast series together and helping us move this initiative forward.
Thank you all for listening, and be sure to look out for more episodes of One Health, One Community.